start by acknowledging my collaborator in this project, Kate Kohalski, who presented on this project at APHA last year. And we're pleased to be able to tell you how the project's evolved and some of the important findings we've had so far. I also want to point out that we have information on the Healthy Home out on the table there, so if you want to follow up on this presentation and be in touch with us or find out more about it, that's an easy way to do so. So what I'd like to do today is just give you a brief introduction to this project, because we've found that it captures different people's imagination and interest in different ways. And so I'd like to just tell you a bit about its history, the partnership that gave rise to this project, goals of the project, an overview of the progress we've made, some of our future plans, and then the way we connect this project to policy, to give you an opportunity to think about how your interests and your context may interact with this this project. I look at this Healthy Home project as something much more than public health education. It really is in the context of policy and social change and contributing to action both in the individual and the social level. A little bit of historical context. This project arose from a wave of activism around the issue of childhood lead poisoning in Rochester. It started around the year 2000, and this map really sums up the motivation for that initiative. So in 2002, the Center for Government Relations was funded by our county health department to do an overview and sort of a snapshot of childhood lead poisoning in Rochester. And as part of that report, they published this map, which I refer to over and over again. You can see that there's sort of an area in pink and red in a shape like a crescent around the city. And that's what it's called in Rochester, the crescent. And usually the crescent refers to an area of low income, low SES neighborhoods, where all the crime happens, where all the housing in bad repair is, and where all the childhood lead poisoning cases are. So those areas are neighborhoods which had over 25% childhood lead poisoning, some of which had over a third of the children in those neighborhoods that were lead poisoned. It's very clearly a health problem with a housing solution. Virtually all of this childhood lead poisoning is related to older housing and poor condition. And recognizing that and that educational and financial approaches were not going to solve this problem, a coalition to prevent lead poisoning was formed around 2000 and really focused their efforts on advocacy for local policy change. And that was successful in 2005. We got a local lead law passed, which is the first of its kind in New York State outside New York City. And we're very proud of that. But one of the things that we contributed to that advocacy effort was a very short-term project called the Lead Lab. And this arose in the course of a direct action project that we were running to test the homes of all the patients of this one community health center where 40% of the kids were lead poisoned. And as part of that project, we realized that people were having a hard time understanding what we were talking about, that preventing lead hazards was a big scary thing to them. They had only heard this is going to cost $20,000 or $30,000 per house, and a lot of the houses in these neighborhoods were worth a lot less than that. It was seen as just an infeasible, intractable problem. But when we actually got an empty house and borrowed it for a couple weekends and cleaned it up and put a couple hundred dollars in donated paint and supplies and sweat equity into that house, we made it lead safe, and we used it as a very short-term demonstration for 2 weekends, had about 100 visitors come through. And that's really pointed to by a lot of advocates as a watershed moment in that policy effort, because not only did community members come through and property owners, but city and county officials, most significantly the city of Rochester's lawyer, who had refused to have anything to do with the idea of a lead law up until that moment. But when she saw that it really wasn't rocket science, that it really wasn't much more than the landlord was going to do anyway, but just with a little better education about how to do it in a lead-safe way, all of a sudden her objections to this policy change were vastly reduced. And that made a big impact on us, because we tried everything else to get to these people. And when we realized how effective this was with a large range of audiences, we thought, gosh, this is something we really need to build on. So part of the way we built on it was to expand the focus from lead to healthy homes more broadly. We realized that the national groups had expanded their focus from lead to include other environmentally related disease within the home context. We also knew that the asthma data for Rochester looked just like the lead map, that Crescent as well, and that there were also health threats related to mold, pests, carbon monoxide, deteriorated asbestos, tobacco smoke and toxic chemicals in the home that mapped onto this area as well. So we really wanted to develop an integrated approach for older, low-income urban homes that was really targeted at that audience, primarily renters of low-income housing. The initial partners in this project were the University of Rochester, a community group from Southwest Rochester called SWAN, the Rochester Fatherhood Resource Initiative that was training underemployed fathers to do lead hazard control work, Action for a Better Community that was our partner on that previous direct action project, and the Regional Community Asthma Network. From our other experiences in the community, we recognize that partnerships are not easy. They're hard to sustain. They take a lot of energy. And as this group said to each other in 2004, we like each other now. We want to still like each other at the end of the day whenever this is done. So we developed together some principles for collaboration to explicitly put out on the table the things that were difficult for groups like this to work together and how we were going to maintain that relationship. Starting with those partners, we clarified our goals, that we really wanted to educate people about home-based environmental health hazards and to tell them about those hazards, but also to support action to address those hazards. We didn't just want to raise their awareness, we wanted to motivate action. And here's a couple of scenes from inside the healthy home. So our approach was to take a physical home that people could imagine looked like the home that they look in. Ours happens to be a bit grander than most because we had to find a place that was commercially zoned, had some available parking, that the university felt comfortable leasing, that was accessible, and that was big enough to actually bring groups of people in. But we found from the Lead Lab experience that having a place that really looked like a home was really useful to people. So we offer free tours to people in this setting. All of our educational displays and interactions are hands-on. That was the big lesson we got from the Lead Lab, is particularly with this audience, they're not going to read a lot of things, they're not going to listen to long explanations, they're not going to go to health fairs and pick up brochures, but when you show them in a very physical way, this is what you need to do in your bedroom, in your kitchen, it really has an impact. We also are careful to tailor tours to diverse audiences, and that's sort of built on the findings of the asthma study that was discussed earlier. And for each hazard, we provide information on what is the health risk, so what is the environmentally related disease, what is the hazard that can contribute to that disease, what are some low-cost solutions, particularly that renters and owners of low-value housing can take in a feasible way, and then offering resources that are available to support follow-up and action. And then we do also follow up with visitors and groups that have visited the home. There's a lot of words on here, and you may not be able to read the whole thing, so I just want to point out that this is conceptually how we think about our message. Again, for each of those four environmental health risks down the left-hand side, we offer information on the hazards, the solutions, and the resources. And this is how we do it. We realize that a lot of these issues and risks cluster around different areas and functions of the home. You know, the basement is the source of lots of really nasty, ugly things. Asbestos, carbon monoxide, radon, mold. In the kitchen is where you might be most likely to find household chemicals. There might also be carbon monoxide risks, etc. So we designed all of our displays around how those hazards might come out in your home. So, for example, windows are clearly one of the biggest sources of childhood lead poisoning in Rochester. The middle window there is what a lot of windows in a lot of our clients' houses look like when we arrive there. And the original Lead Lab had windows like that, and we fixed them up and then showed them to the public. And we decided that for a facility where you'd have school groups and all kinds of people coming through all the time, having live active lead hazards is probably not a good idea. So one of our partners from the county health department saw one of the 3,000 homes that's being demolished in Rochester and asked if he could just have the windows. So he took his chainsaw out of the back of his truck, cut out the window and mounted it on the stand, and then did two other window displays, one showing sort of the $20 solution to a lead hazard hazardous window, and the other showing the $200 solution with information about how you can do each one in a safer way than actually having hazardous windows. for the asthma issues, we designed an asthma-safe bedroom because that's what a lot of the home interventions focus on. We were really impressed by the data coming out of some of the projects locally about the effectiveness of home visits, but realized that they could only visit the homes of a couple hundred kids a year, if that, because that's such a resource-intensive process. So could we offer those kinds of messages and get that kind of value in one site that people came to in a more cost-effective way? So this is a bed that has the dust mite covers on it. You can sort of see on the left-hand side there's some shelves with lots of toys on them. So if children come into the home and we say, so what could you do to make this bedroom more safe and reduce the asthma triggers, they can scoop those things off the shelf and put them in a bed. We also have in there a healthy housekeeping station that shows the materials that are used to reduce chemicals, to control dust, to reduce hazards, particularly from asthma triggers and lead. Some of the ways that we reach out to our different audiences are to have group functions in the home. Every year we have a community barbecue. The Asthma Coalition had one of their parent groups actually meet in the home. All of the neighborhood block clubs and church groups have been invited to have their regular meetings at the home. We've had a lot of camp and school groups come through, and Lead Safe Work Practices trainings held in the home so that people get a hands-on component to that classroom curriculum. We've had tours for all of these different kinds of audiences, and I'd like to emphasize that people really think about the residents and the children when they think about this sort of hands-on project most, but I've been most struck by the responsiveness of healthcare care providers. We have two or three nursing classes, and all of the family medical residents from the University of Rochester come through this facility, and they are just really stunned by this information. A lot of them know a lot about medical management of asthma, and this is all new to them. And about a quarter of our visitors have been healthcare providers of one sort or another. We're also working on truly trying to reach out to the property management audience because we think that's really important. So in terms of our accomplishments, we have on our website our first year report, and I'd invite you to look at that if you'd like more information. But in general, we had 740 visitors during our first year, and up through last month, that's gone up to about 1,200. Most of those people came as part of an organized group. 95 different groups visited. One of the things that I'm most excited about is that 25 different groups have joined our advisory council. And that's important because we don't expect this project to be sustained over time. It's very resource intensive. And so we have the end game in sight from the beginning, which is to invite all of the groups that already do messages about preventive care, that go out to high-risk homes, whether it be for child abuse prevention or for asthma or for any other reason, and make sure that we push this message into their work so that when we're gone, they can carry that message forward. We've written lots and lots of grant proposals, and we're successful in getting enough money to support the project for about 2 years. Does it work? I'd like to show this example, which is our city councilwoman, Gladys Santiago, who was really not sure about the lead law until we invited her over to one of our earlier projects, and we showed her how to take a dust wipe sample, and she was so proud of herself and said, oh, this is what you're talking about. My inspectors can handle that, and she ended up voting for the lead law. So, again, the full information from the evaluations are available on our web, but we've gotten 360 surveys back and found very strongly that people found that the hands-on approach was the most important thing to them. But also importantly, everyone who leaves is asked to fill out planned action sheet, and 69% of them plan to take some sort of physical action in their home. Almost 60% said they were going to change their cleaning habits, and almost 60% said they were going to clean to teach others about what they learned. We've been able to do follow-up calls with 117 of the visitors, and out of those, 107 took their action. And so we're really pleased by that promising indication that people are thinking about feasible things they can do and actually following up on that. So here's some of our future plans. This has really caught the attention of a lot of people, and they're constantly wanting to put more information in. So the fire department has put in the display, and the Injury-Free Coalition for Kids has put in the display. People are very excited about building on this for nutrition and obesity prevention. EPA really wants us to put in energy efficiency information. So we don't want to overwhelm people, but it really is neat that this has caught people's attention as a community hub for information so much that they really want in. We're also working hard on trying to figure out how to push into that audience of contractors and property managers, a very difficult group to meet. But when we do get individuals from that group, they are also very strongly affected by the experience. So we have to just figure out a better way to get them in. And we've developed a guide to replication, because whenever we talk about this, whenever federal agencies come and visit, they get really excited and say, gosh, I wish I had one of these in our community. And so we're developing a guide to replication to help people learn from our lessons and be able to skip over from some of the learning stages to be able to do that. Again, in terms of significance, I think this is a good model for a low-income home education. As far as we know, it's really unique. Most of the other green model homes we know of are for new construction and higher-income audiences. We've been amazed at how diverse audiences are really responding to the experiment. Again, it's a hub for community activities that brings people around together around something tangible, and then different projects grow out of it, and really has developed a network of agencies that weren't interacting before. We're really working to build on existing policies and programs rather than creating new ones, and we think that we're having a significant ripple effect that way. And then again, influencing existing organizations to incorporate these messages into what they do, and we think that's how we're going to be sustained over time. Well, if you're ever in Rochester, please come visit us. We don't get very many out-of-town visitors, and we arrange tours on demand at people's convenience. And if you'd like more information, our website is there, or you're welcome to email myself or Kate. Thank you.